Good morning, Mr. White. It looked like you were dodging a wayward kangaroo just then. Are you okay, Mr. White?
I'm okay. I was attempting a dance move. I've got a swirly, spinny chair, and I tried to do a little half spin. I forgot that the handle, the armrest was a bit up, and it knocked the desk, and I have, of course, got a glass of wine and a half bottle of wine.
Disastrous.
I had a moment. But hello, how are you, Mrs. Angel?
We are at the end of a term.
Oh, how good.
I am
cooked.
I'm ready for a holiday. I'm not going to lie. It's been a big term, a glorious term, and I am heading into a holiday very soon, a well-deserved holiday. How are you?
Yeah. No, same story. Same story. Yeah, first term, I really enjoy first term, but yes, tiring. There's a lot of new, you know, new systems, new gears to master, and there's a lot of chopping and changing, and yeah, you do often get pretty tired. And I'm noticing, I'm a tutor of year seven this year. I haven't been a year seven tutor, but I haven't really taught year sevens for many years. I am noticing some tiredness creeping in, and it. Yeah, this holiday is coming at a very good time, I think.
Yeah. And it's different for a grade grade six to grade seven a young person. That is, it's a big change.
Lots of
new relationships that they need to make. And
new
it's
systems they've got to master. Yeah. I mean, they're going to different classes instead of the classes coming to them, you know, all that sort of stuff. Big changes, huge changes. And so, yeah, I mean, that all takes its toll and yeah, we're getting close to holidays and can't come soon enough.
I'm assuming everybody's probably still also recovering from the trauma of camp.
Yes. Regular listeners will remember that we had a situation where there were some challenges at camp. Yes. That's probably true. Gee, that feels like a while ago now. Yeah. That was in week three.
Well, that's a good sign. That trauma has passed and everybody's moved on to new trauma.
Yes.
I had some trauma the other day. Mm-hmm. We are growing our school, which is great. We've got a tiny little smidgen of extra space. We're bringing in a new class of kids. So I'm interviewing lots of grade four to sixes, doing information sessions, and then they come in and they do an interview. And I went back to back. I did an information session, 1 hour. Take them for a tour of the schools and, you know, tell them as much information about the school as I can so they can make an informed decision. Mm-hmm. Straight after that, then I had a conversation with a number of parents. And this particular one happened in the middle of the day. I'd smashed down some lunch first, done the information session, the tour, went, and our parents said, I've taken the day off work. I really want to come to your school. Can I go straight into an enrollment meeting? Absolutely. Just need to talk to a few more of these parents first. And then I did the enrollment interview, went really well. The kid was great. And our parents are so excited, enrolled them. Went, oh gosh, you know, I'm going to go to the toilet now. Do a quick wee, went in there. You know, obviously did my business, washed my hands, gave myself a little smile like, yeah, keep going. And noticed that I had most of my lunch stuck just here between my teeth. It was kind of a hanging down kind of green bit that obviously had been there for at least the last hour and 45 minutes.
Oh, well, I don't know what to say to that. That's on you. I mean, it is, but... It does. You know what it does do? It does highlight the importance of brushing teeth.
Too soon, Mr. White.
Too soon.
But too soon. Look,
hey, and kudos for you for giving yourself a little, you know, finger pistols into the mirror. I don't think we do that often enough. I love doing a bit of that.
I highly recommend you do it because you never know what you're going to find when you give yourself.
Yes.
Go get them, Tiger. Get into there and, well, maybe take that entire lettuce leaf out of your mouth.
I'm sure they didn't notice it at all.
I'm certain they did because it was anyway, I'm so sorry to those parents. I'm so impressed that they decided to enroll their child in our school. And,
yes, absolutely. Trusting into your care. You're obviously someone who can manage themselves really well and someone who can teach their child, how to live their life. It's fantastic.
Well, high hygiene standards. It's like are in good hands. All right. Well, how about you take the edge off and let's talk a wisecrack. What brilliance have you been bringing into your classroom?
All right. So I had to go back a few way for this
weekly wisecracks. What do you got, Mr. White?
How did I forget that there's a sting for this?
There's a sting for that.
So teaching year 11 English, and there was a new student who'd come from England. And, so she was from England. She's coming to the class, and she was, you know, talking to us about what it was like in England and, you know, and talking to us about what her experiences were coming to Australia. And she said that she was watching Australian MasterChef last night.
Great show.
Yeah. And she said some guy made a meringue and everybody laughed. And she said, I thought, that's odd. Usually in Australia, they boomerang.
Wow.
straight away, this girl gets an A.
Oh.
It's quality. It's definitely quality.
She gets Australians. That's impressive.
Gets the Australian comedy sense of humour straight away.
Well played. Well played. Is she just trying to rival you in your classrooms? It sounds to me like she's a big fan of the show.
Quite possibly. And look, I don't normally like doing the Whitey's Wisecracks where I'm not the one cracking the wisecrack. But this one was actually pretty good. So I thought, yeah, fair enough. Hats off to you.
Well played, Queen Elizabeth. Impressive. All right. Well, hey, I thank you. That was more than I deserved, frankly. It has been a wild term. And I could give you plenty of.
Let's do some highlights.
All right. I'm going to put them under teaching tales because they deserve to be teaching tales.
Good.
Teaching tales. Dun, dun, dun.
All right. There was this one time when when I was getting into the lift at school to go from level one to level three, and one of my grade nine students came around the corner and then asked if he could get into the lift with me. And I had a moment because he got into the lift And he was in his Minecraft pajamas. And I had that moment, do I know who this is or not? I'm sure this is this student, but he wasn't in a school uniform. He was literally in his Minecraft pajamas. And I had a moment when I thought, am I sleeping? Is this a dream? Am I making this up? The door's open, we get out on level three. The boy goes, bye, miss. And then he heads to his classroom carrying his bag in his Minecraft pajamas. And I go to my room and then I call downstairs because he obviously had a late pass because he was a bit late. And I said, was that just insert student's name? Was he in his pajamas? And they said, yes. His mum called to let us know that they'd had a bit of a argument at home and he didn't want to come to school today. But he said, I'm not changing into my uniform. And she said, I don't care. Just get in the car. You're going to school. So he got into his car in his pajamas. And that was the standoff. And that glorious mother got that child out of the car in his Minecraft pajamas, signed in late slip, up in the lift, sharing a lift with the principal, who, to be fair, I did not question him on his pajamas because I was a little lost at that time and was lost for words. And yes, so I was able to then find out that he actually had his uniform in his bag and because his mum had put that in there. So when the principal asked him after I'd shared a lift with him to, I went to his class and asked him to come out and said, that's not what we wear to school. And he said, I know, but I don't have my uniform here. It's all good, mate, because I've just talked to your mum and she's assured me that it's in your bag. So if you just pop into your bag and you can grab them and you can get changed out of those literally stinky, like it was 14-year-old boy, stinky pajamas. He literally rolled out of bed, came to school. But, hey, I want to just spend a moment applauding those parents
who
get their kids to school.
Hear, hear.
You that hand is, them over to us and we've got this.
But that's
getting that your child to school, absolutely spectacular. And that kid literally left me lost for words just for a moment there.
Oh, that's elite on the part of that parents. Fantastic. Well done.
Impressive. Yes.
Yes.
But
very good.
I've got a better teaching tale because this one has been sent in by a listener, and I think you're going to enjoy this one as well.
Teaching tales. Dun, dun, dun.
So, Mr. White, this teacher tells us that their child, their class was studying health and they were looking at a healthy lunchbox. So the healthy lunchbox was being inspected by all of the class members, and the teacher was going around and looking at all of the class lunchboxes. And the teacher came to little Johnny's lunchbox, and little Johnny opened it up, and there was a sandwich, and there was a muesli bar, and there was a popper, and there was a piece of fruit. And the teacher said, "That's a very, you know, great looking lunchbox, little Johnny." But little Johnny said to the teacher, "Well, actually, I'm not very happy because I was expecting in my lunchbox today a BJ." And the teacher said, "You were expecting a what, sorry?" And he said, "Well, last night my mum had cooked dinner and she said to my dad, if you do the dishes, I will give you a BJ." And they all laughed. And then I thought, I want a BJ. So Dad didn't do the dishes. So I went and did the dishes and I was expecting in my lunchbox today a BJ. Obviously the kid didn't know specifically what a BJ was, but devastated, obviously thinking it was a lunch item that could be tucked into a lunchbox. Yes.
Well, I should bring my lunch from home more often. If that's a possible part of lunch, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, tell us, little Johnny. Tell us, little Johnny.
little Johnny. He's on our toes. Tell me that's happening in a banker's world. Tell me that a banker is dealing with a conversation such as that.
What about records, Clark? Clark day either.
Not happening. The only thing I'm disappointed with that story is that it's not my own story. I wish that was my own story so I could get to tell that story at every barbecue I go to. I would get to tell that story.
Oh, don't let truth get in the way of a good story. Come on. Come on.
Can that be my story?
I reckon that can be your story. I reckon that can be. Enough of that to go around. Come on. It's a story that everyone should hear. It's that good.
I like it.
Yeah, I like absolutely. Absolutely.
There's been it's been a good term. It's been a long term.
Yes.
And something that I read a little while ago that has been on my mind, I want to talk about just to bring the term home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily a positive topic, but it's definitely, I think it's a really important topic. So I saw an article in The Atlantic, and that's by Jonathan Haidt. And his claim is that the new phone-based childhood that took shape roughly 12 years ago is making young people sick and blocking their progress to flourishing in adulthood. So he's come up with four dramatic cultural corrections that need to be taking place and need to be done now. And the reason why this particular article really kind of grabbed my interest was because my child is of this age, was born into this particular age bracket, so the Gen Z. So the Gen Zs are born in and after 1996, and the statistics are really quite staggering. So something and something went suddenly and horribly wrong for adolescents in the early 2010. So my son was born in 2010. So by now you've likely seen the statistics. So rates of depression and anxiety in the United States, and the research here shows that it's similar in Australia, here in Australia. Mm-hmm. They were fairly stable in the 2000s, and they rose by more than 50% in many studies from 2010 to 2019. The suicide rate rose 48% for adolescents aged 10 to 19. And for girls 10 to 14, it rose 143%.
Double and a half. Yes. Yep.
Yep. So similar patterns emerged around the same time in Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and the Nordic countries.
Yep. Yep.
And by a variety of measures, but in all of those areas, they all went up significantly. And they're all the Gen Z suffering from anxiety, depression, self-harm, and related disorders at levels higher than any other generation for which we have data.
Yes. So it's and also quite, lethargy and lack of agency
has also raised.
Yes. That feeling that you are helpless in the world. You can't change the world. You can't change your life. You are stuck with where you are. The respondents of that. People who say that they're experiencing that has skyrocketed at the same time.
And they're saying that this is the terrible cost of phone-based childhood because these kids that were born in 2010 were adolescents in the early 2010s, so not born in 2010. So if you were, you know, 8, 9 in 2010, so really if they were born in 2000s and above, then it will not – 1996 is Gen Z. Anyway, yes. So I have come in at the end of this because obviously, as I said, my child born 2010 and we've had that difficult decision when to give a phone and all of the things that come with this. And so in the article, it argues that these four new norms need to be institutionalized. So they are no smartphones for kids before high school. That's the first one. The second one is no social media before 16. The third one is phone-free schools. And the fourth one is more independence, free play, and responsibility in the real world.
Yep.
So those are the four suggestions that we need to bring in to counteract the effects of this, of the terrible cost of our phone-based childhood.
Yes.
I want to discuss it.
Yes.
I want to know what your opinions on this are. So obviously I have a 13-year-old right now. You've got younger children.
7, 4, and 2, yep.
So you're going to have some decisions coming up. Mm. We've had to make that first decision and we've still got these other ones really, really quite a lot ahead of us. What's your opinions on this or what's been your observations as a teacher?
A lot of what Jonathan Haidt wrote resonated with me pretty strongly. Like the way he articulated why he identified that it was particularly the smartphone that coincided with this precipitous raise, this great increase in these horrible things. We say the smartphone came in, 2007, around there? And I didn't, so I was born in 78. And so he wrote a lot about the way in which previous generations had grown up. And the last point there resonates strongly with me, the idea that free play should be valued and it should be unsupervised as much as possible. Really resonates.
Independence.
So you can learn your own way and you are meant to fall off your bike. You know, you're meant to have all these experiences that sharpen your understanding of the limits of your ability or limits of the safety of the world around you. I just remember going around on my bikes with mates around the neighborhood when I was 14, 13, 12 maybe even. And we could go wherever we want, as far as we could go and ride a bike, as long as we were home by dark. And this was all done without my parents having the ability to contact me at all. Because obviously I didn't have a phone then. I didn't have access to all this other sort of stuff. neither did my parents. But they let me do all this because it was pretty normal at the time. I mean, you walk around the streets in the late 80s, early 90s, you'd see kids on bikes everywhere.
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 Yep.
At the park, kicking the footy. Look, you still see all that now.
Can I pause you for a second? When you drive through your neighbourhood now and you see a group of kids on their bikes, what do you think?
Well, they're up to no good.
Okay. And you've lived – and I agree wholeheartedly because I lived your childhood, Whitey. I had that free play and we could come back and we were out and until we knew when we were in, but had we actually had that conversation about when we had to be back in and myself as a absolute lover of children and adolescence, and I don't feel like I love kids and I get teenagers, but my first thought as I'm driving around and I see a group of teenagers on bikes, I think, ooh,
dodgy.
What will the neighborhood watch think? Oh, I hope they're being vigilant. And then I catch myself having that thought and then I replace that thought. But yes. But we see less and less of it and then we think they're up to no good. But you previously, groups of teenagers out doing independent play was norm.
Yep. And yes, absolutely. And even it did strike me that I haven't seen kids at the park kicking the footy or playing cricket or doing whatever without a parent being there or without it being organized sport where there are people who are in authority overseeing and supervised. And that struck me as actually, this has really crept up on me because now that I'm considering it, I can see it everywhere. Like I run in this circuit. It's a 9K circuit and there are lots of footy ovals around where I run, lots of open space. And there are kids there, but they're all supervised. I never see, this forced me to realize, I never see kids there just having kicks for goal who are 13, 14, 15 without a parent being there, even 16, 17 probably, without, a parent being there. And that's what I used to do all the time. I used to go down the park when I was 14, 15, ride my bike there, meet my mates, kick the footy for a while and play cricket or play tiggy or whatever. And then find my way home. So that fourth point for there really resonated very strongly with me. It's something that I think we're missing. And I'm wondering, look, we all want our kids to be safe. We all want the children in our community to be safe. But I think a lot of this stems from a fear that is irrational. And while the consequences are huge, it's very rare for something to go wrong. For kids going around the neighborhood like this.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like we've had so my evidence when I'm being irrationally protective of my child, of my 13-year-old boy, I think in the back of my mind, so an Australian example is Daniel Morcombe. So in 2003, Daniel Morcombe, a beautiful 13-year-old boy, was abducted and murdered in 2003. And so this is right in that little – and there's obviously examples of this all around the world. And so that is – I can understand, and I'm actively trying to work against this, but I can do a hell of a lot better, I know, to achieve that fourth point of that independence and just letting them go out and make their own mistakes.
Mm.
But I feel like Daniel Morcombe is my reason why, if I'm ever going to need to justify why not, it's because of Daniel Morcombe.
Yeah.
And I know that if you're listening in America, you'll have your local child around somewhere in the 2000s that you went, oh, I need to be, say no, that might be the reason why you're taking away that child's independence.
Mm.
But this research, and Daniel Morcombe's story is horrifying. And heartbreaking for his amazing parents, but these stats are staggering, staggering. So we're protecting our child. We're kind of probably maybe taking away their independence and their free play because we're worried about these 0.5% of the disgusting part of the human population. and we're giving them a phone instead and kind of free range on a phone, and it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, so maybe we're taking away that independence, yes, but you can keep your connection through this phone. And the phone, we're seeing the stats are leading to more than 50% of suicide rates rising, 48% for adolescents 10 to 14, and rising 131% for girls aged 10 to 14%.
That is scary.
Yeah.
That is really, really scary.
So I feel like I'm bringing this up because I feel a tension here. I feel a tension because I want to set my kid up for success. Every parent wants to set their kid up for success. Every teacher wants every child that they're teaching to be successful. And where there's this tension between that free play and the independence, but wanting to keep your child safe. But then by them having a phone, a smartphone, we're actually seeing that we're reducing their safety and their feeling of safety in other ways. So it's such a tension. So I'm not saying there's any clear answer here. I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is because there is an immense tension, and I have ticked I can say that I've achieved one of these objectives. So no smartphones before high school. I held the line. I was the worst person in the world. But waited until Zave was in grade 7 to get a smartphone, and was still reluctant at that stage. Would have preferred a flip phone, but also he's to allow for that independence to be able to catch buses to school and be able to work out the bus schedule. I have allowed the smartphone when he's going into high school to be able to catch the buses and do the things.
Yes.
But I've still and wonderfully, this year in Queensland, we've bought in all state schools, it is a phone-free zone. So the third objective here, in Australia, in Queensland, and I know also in your state, Whitey, in Victoria, the government schools set the standard a couple of years ago of bringing in phone-free schools. So phones are off and away. And I know from what I'm hearing from my son is that there is more connection between kids at lunchtime by them having phones off and away. And we initially thought it was going to be a big deal, an enormous deal, and the kids won't cope, and this is going to be a bad thing, or there'll be so much pushback. But 95% of families want this. Probably 95% of kids, once it happens, are okay with it. And remember, their frontal lobe is not developed, so they don't actually know. They don't know right from wrong. They don't know. All they know is they're addicted to their phones.
That's right.
They're
still building the risk reward in their brains, and the instant gratification that this stuff gives you doesn't encourage you to take risks. It doesn't encourage you to grow. And I would argue that there's absolutely no reason why a student needs a phone while at school. I understand why a parent might want to have the phone in the hand of a student on the way to school and the way home from school. But at school, there is absolutely no reason. They are at school. They are safe. They are surrounded by people who are probably more well-versed in the well-being of young children than they are at home. And
deeply invested. Yep.
Deeply invested. And the number of issues that I've dealt with that stemmed from a child texting a parent about something that happened at school, the way that just manifests and makes the problem so much worse is just horrific. It really does just amplify the problem. There's nothing good that can come of it.
Yeah.
And there is just no reason, I think, for a student to have a phone while at school. If the parent really needs to contact the student, you can ring the school. We know where the student is. We can contact them. We can
always. You can get a message to them.
Absolutely. And vice versa. If a student needs to get a message that's urgent to a parent, they can do that. They don't need to be able to do it through a phone.
In an instant. That instant. Exactly. And I would also, I know from a science of learning perspective that by not having the phone in the hand, it's helping students with cognitive overload as well. That's, it's one less thing to worry about. It's one less thing to think about. It's one, if they know that they can't have access to that phone, they can actually be all in at school.
Yep.
They don't have to worry about which of my friends has text messaged me and I'm going to be able to see it at lunchtime.
Yep.
Or what is little, person going to be cyberbullying me when I check at lunchtime and I check all of my socials, am I going to have a nasty message from somebody else? Because we know that these phones are addictive. So if they are allowed to have them in their hands and be checking them at lunchtime, they will check them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there is a nasty message there, then that child is in cognitive overload and they're not going to be able to learn. That's the only thing that's going to be in their brain. So that's
exactly right. And what was the stat that Jonathan Hayter presented? I think it was something like the average high school student gets 250 notifications per day, 250 notifications per day from text messages, Facebook, MySpace, how old am I? Snapchat, Instagram, all those things.
Overwhelming.
Just think about how well you'll be able to concentrate if someone was tapping you on the shoulder every often that is. You can't think, and I really am worried about how we're teaching our children, our students, in terms of developing their ability to think deeply. I think we teach them really well how to think about a lot of things at once and how to think superficially.
Yeah,
and broadly. And
we're trying deeply to help them to be discerning, like what's real, what's fake news, and real news, so that quick decisions and being able to scan something and go, is this real or not?
Yes.
But you're right, that ability to have that. You can only think deeply when your working memory is freed up.
Yes.
And if your working memory is clogged and you're in cognitive overload because and what we know, the science of learning says we can actually only hold around about 4 pieces of information in our working memory at any time. So if some of those 4 important things is worrying or thinking about your social media accounts, then you're diminishing the opportunity to be able to think about anything else that's in front of you at that time.
I'd say you're obliterating it. I'd say you'd have no chance. You would have no chance.
Yeah, yeah. So we're in a blessed situation in the two states that we are in Australia, that one of these 4 suggestions of no smartphones before high school, no social media before 16, phone-free schools, and more independence, free play, and responsibility in the real world. So these 4 suggestions to really help these kids, these kids of this generation that we're teaching right now, to be able to overcome that terrible cost of the phone-based childhood.
Mm.
I've got decisions to make as a parent because I've achieved the first one, no smartphones before high school, and he has a smartphone now because he's in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to hold that line on no social media before 16.
How are you going with it?
How
do you do it? How do you even bring it up?
So we haven't battled over it yet. It's been mentioned and it keeps on being brought up in conversation. Hey, can I? And then most definitely though, when I say, oh yeah, no, not now. Now's not the time. So at the moment I'm able to kind of push back and he's accepting the pushback.
Mm-hmm.
There will come a time where he won't accept the pushback.
Yep.
And definitely it's been prior to the pushback, everyone else has got it.
Yep.
And this is the challenge of, and he's not lying. He's not lying because when he says everyone else, he actually doesn't know every single person. But I actually accept that the majority of people, he's not lying when he is saying this. Everyone else who's anyone else has got this right now.
Yes.
And possibly by me saying no to this, I am denying him a social connection.
Yes.
And I guess I'm also in a fortunate position because my child is quite social and does other things beyond school. So it's going to be, if I choose to hold the line on this, it's going to be easier for me to hold the line on this. And it's not going to be as easy for other parents whose children are not as social to be able to this, because to them, this is and will be their social connection.
Yes. But you're lucky because your boy's very sporty as well, and so he develops a lot of his connections through that.
Yes.
And I'd imagine a lot of the reason that he uses his phone would be to check up on the NBA.
Correct.
And what's going over there. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but
exactly.
that's another thing that this article brought up that I found was very interesting. A study of students around this age, maybe a little bit older, said that the only reason, well, the major reason why they wanted to be on these platforms was because their mates are. But given the opportunity, if no one else of their mates were on these platforms, they wouldn't be on. They would choose not to be. They would choose not to be. And I think that's really, really important to remember because I don't think this is a Wild West. I mean, we don't know what we're doing here. And it's only really now that the data is coming through and we've been wondering why, you know, rates of depression have been increasing and all these other diagnoses have been increasing. And I think for a long time we've noticed this and we've thought, well, that's because our detection abilities are better than they were. We are better at diagnosing this now. I'm starting to think that we've over-tipped that point. We've over-tipped that point, and I think we need to start looking for a reason why people that we are teaching, our young people in our community, feel so isolated when they are as connected as anyone has ever been in the history of the world.
Yeah.
You know, that this is, you know, they don't feel confident in themselves. They don't feel the ability to tackle challenges. They are so, don't like the term, but I do think that a lot of them are precious. And they're not being exposed to challenges that are going to help them grow.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that is, I'm not saying I have the answer for that. I'm just saying that we need to start looking for an answer for that because I think something is going
on. What if because back in, I sound like I'm pulling out my Zimmer frame and I'm creeping along, obviously, here with my Zimmer frame.
Last week?
Yes. Yes. So what if back in our day.
I know.
It was predictable. We knew what people were likely to step forward and challenge us on and say, and then we would have the opportunity to challenge them back. Yes. And most of those arguments were grounded in logic and being reasonable. And now we've created a world for our children where they put photos up of themselves. So if a photo of yourself is just you stepping forward in a new outfit or with a new haircut in real life, and then in real life, if you had a terrible haircut moment like our child did when my husband accidentally, you know, totally removed the front of his hair in a home haircut.
Accidentally.
And the children at school then say to him, you know, oh, you know, nice hair, and then he goes, oh yeah, but how about your face? And then it's kind of left there, you know. But then if they were to then put a photo up online.
Oh, jeez.
About with that haircut and go, oh, gee, Dad gave me a terrible haircut. And then is the word vitriol that could come at the student at the child as a result of that.
That isn't logical. The pylon.
And it isn't. Yeah, and then you can't actually come back at it, and you can't rationalize it, and I don't know, and so it's not rational, it's not logical, it's not predictable, and so therefore it becomes more in your brain than what it needs to be, and you're in cognitive overload, and then your brain's trying to create connections between what people are saying, and it's kind of I'm not an expert in this, that this is creating such cognitive overload that the brain's trying to find connections in it, and then it can't, because it doesn't make sense. People online are making comments on other things that don't make any sense. It's not predictable, logical, and then the person who's receiving that comment is trying to create logic or sense out of it, and it's not possible to.
I think you're right, and I think a big part of that is context. I mean, you need to understand the context in order to understand the message. And, you know, if you rock up to school and you got a crappy haircut, you cop it, okay, your mates with them, they see you, you see them, you've got a relationship with them, there's a contextual background to that. On social media, you don't get that at all.
No, you
can just snipe from the cheap seats. And I mean, we know. I mean, anyone who pretends that this doesn't affect children or, you know, adolescents hasn't read the literature and has just got their head in the sand. We know this affects people. We know it does. Yep. We know it leads to self-harm, depression, all sorts of horrible things that we just don't want to be. We don't want to be playing with. You know, we don't want that to be a part of it. And just think about. I'm big on the idea that we should value the message and the idea, value the idea, and not the person saying the idea. No, it's not about who is saying it. It's about the idea that's being presented. You argue against the idea, absolutely. You're not necessarily arguing against the person. Mm-hmm. And I think we've lost that. I think so much of the celebrity culture that we've built, and you know, I might be going down a little bit of a rabbit hole here, but I think social media supports this. It's more about who you are than it is what you say. And I'm worried about the world that's going to manifest.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I agree. But I guess these kids of this next generation, and the parents, more importantly, the parents of the kids of this generation and beyond, I feel like Gen Z, there was no research on this. We put smartphones in kids' hands and there was no research, and we had to make the best of it. Mm-hmm. But there's research coming out now, and we need to read it and we need to respond to it. And our kids are possibly going to hate us for it.
Yep. Yep. And I think the generational divide between ours and the next is going to be enormous.
Yeah. Yeah. But they also are relying on us to be able to, take some action here. And I have lost sleep over Jonathan Haidt's article, and I will continue to think about it, and it will continue to shape my thinking for my son. And that doesn't mean I'm going to get it right at all, but I'm going to very much consider this. I recommend anybody on LinkedIn to look at Jonathan, Jonathan Haidt is Haidt. And the article that is in The Atlantic. So he's a professor at NYU Stern School of Business, and he has done a lot of research on this. So thank you to Jonathan. Thanks, for Jonathan. Professor Jonathan, for doing that. And I will continue to explore this and ride this wave.
Yep. And good. I mean, that's got to be a pat on the back for you, because your natural intuition and what you've seen has led you to make this call before this article with your son. So good on you for seeing this as an issue and making a call.
Are you listening to this, Xavier? I'm not the devil. I'm a Sharon Angel. Are you listening?
Angel, literally an angel.
Literally angel. Although, to be fair, I married the angel. I needed a little bit of help from a friend to be able to become an angel, but.
And I'm not, I'm not religious, but let's not forget that the devil was a fallen angel as well. But no, it's still good. It's still good.
That's good. I will probably bring that up in conversation in the next couple of years.
Just don't fall. Simple.
Okay, good. Oh, I'm a parent, so I will. All right. Oh, I will. It's a
parenting hard.
Hill will die on every day.
Parenting's hard. Parenting is hard.
Thank you. Thank you to all of the parents out there supporting the teachers. It takes a village to raise a child and to educate a child.
It does.
And yeah. All right. That was deep. And but I also think important.
I think so. Absolutely. For a one-on-one, Chaz, that was very deep. We normally don't achieve those deep without a third person, because we tend to be a little bit lighter. Light. But we can think. Great. We can.
Yes. And it's been an amazing term. It's been a fantastic term. And so thank you to everyone who's joined us throughout this extra seat of this season. So season 5.
We've had some great guests this season, haven't we? This term. Fantastic. Really good.
Absolutely. It's been exciting. And we are back for an extra season, another season. Every season's a win. So we will be back for season 6 with we've already recorded some amazing episodes for season 6. So please stay tuned. And I want to say a big thank you to everybody who's listening. I want to say, particularly if you're listening and you're a teacher, you are doing exceptional work. I know that It's not easy, but I know myself that it's worth it, and I know that sometimes days will come up and it won't feel like you're making a difference, but we talk to people every week and we hear their stories about those little moments that kids actually do take away from every connection that you're having with them. So yes, stick with it. Changing absolutely lives. You're changing lives, Mr. White.
You're changing lives, thank you very lives, much, Mrs. Angel.
Stop it. Stop, stop it. Stop it. I'm not crying. You're crying.
Oh, you're talking dirty to me now.
All right. We will see everyone back for season 6. Have an amazing holiday.
Thank you,
when
have
you
a
get
great
there
holiday, yeah. Absolutely. Yep, we'll, enjoy it.
You deserve
up
this.
You yep deserve
and
this.
We'll see you back for season 6.
Great.
I said season 6.
Hello to all our right Kiwi friends.
Kiwi friends, season 6. Sessions sex.
Sessions sex.
Goodbye, Mr. White.
Goodbye, Mrs. Angel.
Powered by Riverside.